This is Audible.
Recorded books and one-click digital present Red Rising by Pierce Brown, narrated by Tim Gerard Reynolds and directed by Abigail McHugh.
I would have lived in peace, but my enemies brought me war. I watched 1,200 of their strongest sons and daughters, listening to a pitiless golden man speak between great marble pillars, listening to the beast who brought the flame that gnaws at my heart. "All men are not created equal," he declares. Tall, imperious, an eagle of a man. "The weak have deceived you. They would say the meek should inherit the earth, that the strong should nurture the gentle. This is the noble lie of democracy, the cancer that poisoned mankind." His eyes pierce the gathered students. "You and I are gold. We are the end of the evolutionary line. We tower above the flesh heap of man, shepherding the lesser colors. You have inherited this legacy." He pauses, studying faces in the assembly. "But it is not free. Power must be claimed, wealth won, rule, dominion, empire purchased with blood. You scarless children deserve nothing. You do not know pain. You do not know what your forefathers sacrificed to place you on these heights. But soon you will. Soon, we will teach you why gold rules mankind. And I promise, of those among you, only those fit for power will survive." "But I am no gold. I am a red." He thinks men like me weak. He thinks me dumb, feeble, subhuman. I was not raised in palaces. I did not ride horses through meadows and eat meals of hummingbird tongues. I was forged in the bowels of this hard world, sharpened by hate, strengthened by love. He is wrong. None of them will survive. Part 1. Slave. There is a flower that grows on Mars. It is red and harsh and fit for our soil. It is called Himanthus. It means blood blossom. Chapter 1. Helldiver. The first thing you should know about me is I am my father's son. And when they came for him, I did as he asked. I did not cry. Not when the society televised the arrest. Not when the golds tried him. Not when the greys hanged him. Mother hit me for that. My brother, Kieran, was supposed to be the stoic one. He was the elder, I the younger. I was supposed to cry. Instead, Kieran bawled like a girl when little Io tucked a Himanthus into father's left work boot and ran back to her own father's side. My sister, Liana, murmured a lament beside me. I just watched and thought it a shame that he died dancing, but without his dancing shoes. On Mars, there is not much gravity, so you have to pull the feet to break the neck. They let the loved ones do it. I smell my own stink inside my fry suit. The suit is some kind of nanoplastic and as hot as its name suggests. It insulates me toe to head. Nothing gets in, nothing gets out, especially not the heat. Worst part is, you can't wipe the sweat from your eyes. Bloody damn stings as it goes through the headband to puddle at the heels. Not to mention the stink when you piss, which you always do, Gotta take in a load of water through the drink tube. I guess you could be fit with a catheter. We choose the stink. The drillers of my clan chatter some gossip over the comm in my ear as I ride atop the claw drill. I'm alone in this deep tunnel, on a machine built like a titanic metal hand, one that grasps and gnaws at the ground. I control its rock-melting digits from the holster seat atop the drill, just where the elbow joint would be. There, my fingers fit into control gloves that manipulate the many tentacle-like drills some 90 meters below my perch. To be a hell diver, they say your fingers must flicker fast as tongues of fire. Mine flicker faster. Despite the voices in my ear, I am alone in the deep tunnel. My existence is vibration, the echo of my own breath, and heat so thick and noxious it feels like I'm swaddled in a heavy quilt of hot piss. A new river of sweat breaks through the scarlet sweatbands tied around my forehead and slips into my eyes, burning them till they're as red as my rusty hair. I used to reach and try to wipe the sweat away, only to scratch futilely at the faceplate of my frysuit. I still want to. Even after 3 years, the tickle and sting of the sweat is a raw misery. The tunnel walls, around my holster seat, are bathed a sulphurous yellow by a corona of lights. The reach of the light fades as I look up the thin vertical shaft I've carved today. Above, precious helium-3 glimmers like liquid silver, but I'm looking at the shadows, looking for the pit vipers that curl through the darkness, seeking the warmth of my drill. They'll eat into your suit, too. Bite through the shell and then try to burrow into the warmest place they find, usually your belly, so they can lay their eggs. I've been bitten before. Still dream of the beast. Black, like a thick tendril of oil. They can get as wide as a thigh, and as long as 3 men, but it's the babies we fear. They don't know how to ration their poison. Like me. Their ancestors came from Earth. Then Mars and the deep tunnels changed them. It is eerie in the deep tunnels. Lonely. Beyond the roar of the drill, I hear the voices of my friends, all older. But I cannot see them a half click above me in the darkness. They drill high above, near the mouth of the tunnel that I've carved, descending with hooks and lines to dangle along the sides of the tunnel to get at the small veins of helium-3. They mine with meter-long drills, gobbling up the chaff. The work still requires mad dexterity of foot and hand, but I'm the earner in this crew. I am the hell diver. It takes a certain kind, and I'm the youngest anyone can remember. I've been in the mines for 3 years. You start at 13. Old enough to screw, old enough to crew. At least that's what Uncle Nerol said. Except I didn't get married till 6 months back, so I don't know why he said it. Eo dances through my thoughts as I peer into my control display and slip the claw drill's fingers around a fresh vein. Eo. Sometimes it's difficult to think of her as anything but what we used to call her as children. Little Eo. A tiny girl, hidden beneath a mane of red. Red, like the rock around me. Not true red. Rust red. Red like our home. Like Mars. Eo is 16 too. And she may be like me. From a clan of red earth diggers. A clan of song and dance and soil. But she could be made from air. From the ether that binds the stars in a patchwork. Not that I've ever seen stars. No red from the mining colonies sees the stars. Little Eo. They wanted to marry her off when she turned 14, like all girls of the clans. But she took the short rations and waited for me to reach 16, wed age for men, before slipping that cord around her finger. She said she knew we'd marry, since we were children. I didn't.
Hold, hold, hold!
Uncle Nerol snaps over the comm channel.
Darrow, hold, boy!
My fingers freeze. He's high above with the rest of them, watching my progress on his head unit.
What's the burn?
I ask, annoyed. I don't like being interrupted.
What's the burn? The little hell diver asks.
Old Barlow chuckles.
Gas pocket, that's what.
Nerol snaps. He's the head talk for our 200-plus crew.
Hold! Call on a scan crew to check the particulars before you blow us all to hell.
That gas pocket? It's a tiny one, I say.
More like a gas pimple. I can manage it.
A year on the drill, and he thinks he knows his head from his hole. Poor little pissant.
Old Barlow adds dryly.
Remember the words of our golden leader. Patience and obedience, young one. Patience is the better part of valour, and obedience the better part of humanity. Listen to your elders.
I roll my eyes at the epigram. If the elders could do what I can, maybe listening would have its merits. But they are slow in hand and mind. Sometimes I feel like they want me to be just the same. Especially my uncle.
I'm on a tear, I say. If you think there's a gas pocket, I can just hop down and hand scan it. Easy. No dilly-dally.
They'll preach caution. As if caution has ever helped them. We haven't won a laurel in ages.
Want to make Eeyore widow?
Barlow laughs, voice crackling with static.
Okay by me. She's a pretty little thing. Drill into that pocket and leave her to me. Old and fat I be, but my drill still digs a dent.
A chorus of laughter comes from the 200 drillers above. My knuckles turn white as I grip the controls.
Listen to Uncle Narrow Darrow. Better to back off till we can get a reading.
My brother Kieran adds. He's 3 years older. Makes him think he's a sage, that he knows more. He just knows caution.
There'll be time. Time? Hell, it'll take hours.
I snap. They're all against me in this. They're all wrong and slow and don't understand that the laurel is only a bold move away. More, they doubt me.
You are being a coward, Nerol.
Silence on the other end of the line. Calling a man a coward, not a good way to get his cooperation. Shouldn't have said it.
I say, make the scan yourself.
Lauren, my cousin, and Nerol's son squawks.
Don't, and Ganna is good as gold. They'll get the laurel for, oh, the 100th time.
The laurel. 24 clans in the underground mining colony of Lycos. One laurel per quarter. It means more food than you can eat. It means more burners to smoke. Imported quilts from Earth. Amber swill with the society's quality markings. It means winning. Gamma Clan has had it since anyone can remember, so it's always been about the quota for us lesser clans, just enough to scrape by. Eo says the laurel is the carrot the society dangles, always just far enough beyond our grasp. Just enough so we know how short we really are and how little we can do about it. We're supposed to be pioneers. Eo calls us slaves. I just think we never try hard enough. Never take the big risks because of the old men.
Lauren, shut up about the laurel. Hit the gas and we'll miss all the bloody damn laurels to kingdom come, boy.
Uncle Nerol growls. He's slurring. I can practically smell the drink through the comm. He wants to call a sensor team to cover his own ass. Or he's scared. The drunk was born pissing himself out of fear. Fear of what? Our overlords, the Golds. Their minions, the Greys. Who knows? Few people. Who cares? Even fewer. Actually, just one man cared for my uncle, and he died when my uncle pulled his feet. My uncle is weak. He is cautious and immoderate in his drink, a pale shadow of my father. His blinks are long and hard, as though it pains him to open his eyes each time and see the world again. I don't trust him down here in the mines, or anywhere for that matter. But my mother would tell me to listen to him. She would remind me to respect my elders, even though I am wed, even though I am the hell diver of my clan. She would say that my blisters have not yet become calluses. I will obey, even though it is as maddening as the tickle of the sweat on my face. Fine, I murmur. I clench the drill fist and wait as my uncle calls it in from the safety of the chamber above the deep tunnel. This'll take hours. I do the math. 8 hours till whistle call. To beat Gamma, I've got to keep a rate of 156.5 kilos an hour. It'll take 2.5 hours for the scan crew to get here and do their deal, at best. So I've got to pump out 227.6 kilos per hour after that. Impossible. But if I keep going and squab the tedious scan, it's hours. I wonder if Uncle Neryl and Barlow know how close we are. Probably. Probably just don't think anything's ever worth the risk. Probably think divine intervention will squab our chances. Gamma has the laurel. That's the way things are and will ever be. We of Lambda just try to scrape by on our foodstuffs and meagre comforts. No rising, no falling. Nothing is worth the risk of changing the hierarchy. My father found that out at the end of a rope. Nothing is worth risking death. Against my chest, I feel the wedding band of hair and silk dangling from the cord around my neck, and think of Io's ribs. I'll see a few more of the slender things through her skin this month. She'll go asking the Gamma families for scraps behind my back. I'll act like I don't know. But we'll still be hungry. I eat too much because I'm 16, and still growing tall. Io lies and says she's never got much of an appetite. Some women sell themselves for food or luxuries to the tin pots. Greys, to be technical about it. The society's garrison troops of our little mining colony. She wouldn't sell her body to feed me. Would she? But then I think about it. I'd do anything to feed her. I look down over the edge of my drill. It's a long fall to the bottom of the hole I've dug. Nothing but molten rock and hissing drills. But before I know what's what, I'm out of my straps, scanner in hand, and jumping down the 100-meter drop toward the drill fingers. I kick back and forth between the vertical mineshaft's walls and the drill's long, vibrating body to slow my fall. I make sure I'm not near a pit viper nest when I throw out an arm to catch myself on a gear just above the drill fingers. The 10 drills glow with heat. The air shimmers and distorts. I feel the heat on my face, feel it stabbing my eyes, feel it ache in my belly and balls. Those drills will melt your bones if you're not careful. And I'm not careful. Just nimble. I lower myself, hand over hand, going feet first between the drill fingers, so I can lower the scanner close enough to the gas pocket to get a reading. The heat is unbearable. This was a mistake. Voices shout at me through the comm. I almost brush one of the drills as I finally lower myself close enough to the gas pocket. The scanner flickers in my hand as it takes its reading. My suit is bubbling, and I smell something sweet and sharp like burned syrup. To a hell diver, it is the smell of death. Chapter 2. The Township. My suit can't handle the heat down here. The outer layer is nearly melted through. Soon the second layer will go. Then the scanner blinks silver, and I've got what I came for. I almost didn't notice. Dizzy and frightened, I pull myself away from the drills. Hand over hand, I tug my body up, going fast away from the dreadful heat. Then something catches. My foot is jammed, just underneath one of the gears near a drill finger. I gasp down air in sudden panic. The dread rises in me. I see my boot heel melting. The first layer goes, the second bubbles. Then it will be my flesh. I force a long breath and choke down the screams that are rising in my throat. I remember the blade. I flip out my hinged sling blade from its black holster. It's a cruelly curved cutter, as long as my leg, meant for taking off and cauterizing limbs stuck in machinery, just like this. Most men panic when they get caught, and so the sling blade is a nasty half-moon weapon meant to be used by clumsy hands. Even filled with terror, my hands are not clumsy. I slice 3 times with the sling blade, cutting nanoplastic instead of flesh. On the third swing, I reach down and jerk free my leg. As I do, my knuckles brush the edge of a drill. Searing pain shoots through my hand. I smell crackling flesh, but I'm up and off, climbing away from the hellish heat, climbing back to my holster seat, and laughing all the while. I feel like crying. My uncle was right. I was wrong. But I'll be damned if I ever let him know it. "Idiot," is his kindest comment.
"Manic! Bloody damn manic!"
Lauren whoops. "Minimal gas," I say. "Drilling now, uncle." The hallbacks take my pull when the whistle call comes. I push myself out of my drill, leaving it in the deep tunnel for the night shift, and snag a weary hand on the line the others dropped down the kilometre-long shaft to help me up. Despite the seeping burn on the back of my hand, I slide my body upward on the line till I'm out of the shaft. Kieran and Lauren walk with me to join the others at the nearest grav lift. Yellow lights dangle like spiders from the ceiling. My clan and Gamma's 300 men already have their toes under the metal railing when we reach the rectangular grav lift. I avoid my uncle. He's mad enough to spit. And catch a few dozen pats on the back for my stunt. The young ones, like me, think we've won the laurel. They know my raw helium 3 pull for the month. It's better than Gamma's. The old turds just grumble and say we're fools. I hide my hand and duck my toes in. Gravity alters, and we shoot upward. A Gamma scab with less than a week's worth of rust under his nails forgets to put his toes under the railing, so he hangs suspended as the lift shoots up 6 vertical kilometres. Ears pop.
"Got a floating Gamma turd here," Barlow laughs to the Lambdas.
Petty as it may seem, it's always nice to see a Gamma squab something. They get more food, more burners, more everything because of the laurel. We get to despise them. But then, we're supposed to, I think. Wonder if they'll despise us now. Enough's enough. I grip the rust-red nanoplastic of the kid's fry suit and jerk him down. Kid. That's a laugh. He's hardly 3 years younger than I. He's deathly tired, but when he sees the blood-red of my fry suit, he stiffens, avoids my eyes, and becomes the only one to see the burn on my hand. I wink at him, and I think he shits his suit. We all do it now and then. I remember when I met my first hell diver. I thought he was a god. He's dead now. Up top, in the staging depot, a big grey cavern of concrete and metal, we pop our tops and drink down the fresh, cold air of a world far removed from molten drills. Our collective stink and sweat soon make a bog of the area. Lights flicker in the distance, telling us to stay clear of the magnetic horizon tram tracks on the other side of the depot. We don't mingle with the Gammas as we head for the horizon tram in a staggered line of rust-red suits. half with lambda L's, half with gamma canes painted in dark red on their backs. Two scarlet headtalks, two blood-red helldivers. A cadre of tin pots eye us as we trudge by over the worn concrete floor. Their grey duro armour is simple and tired, as unkempt as their hair. It would stop a simple blade, maybe an iron blade, and a pulse blade or razor would go through it like paper. But we've only seen those on the holocan. The greys don't even bother to make a show of force. Their thumpers dangle at their sides. They know they won't have to use them. Obedience is the highest virtue. The grey captain, Ugly Dan, a greasy bastard, throws a pebble at me. Though his skin is darkened from exposure to the sun, his hair is grey like the rest of his colour. It hangs thin and weedy over his eyes. Two ice cubes rolled in ash. The sigils of his colour, a blocky grey symbol like the number 4 with several bars beside it, mark along each hand and wrist. Cruel and stark, like all the greys. I heard they pulled Ugly Dan off the front line back in Eurasia, wherever that is, after he got crippled, and they didn't want to buy him a new arm. He has an old replacement model now. He's insecure about it, so I make sure he sees me give the arm a glance.
So you had an exciting day, darling.
His voice is as stale and heavy as the air inside my fry suit.
Brave hero now, are you, Dara? I always thought you'd be a brave hero.
You're the hero, I say, nodding to his arm.
And you think you're smart, don't you? Just a red.
He winks at me.
Say hello to your little birdie for me. A ripe thing for pigging.
Licks his teeth. Even for a rasta.
Never seen a bird.
Except on the HC.
Ain't that a thing? He chuckles. Why, where are you going?
He asks as I turn.
A bow to your betters won't go awry, don't you think?
He snickers to his fellows. Careless of his mockery, I turn and bow deeply. My uncle sees this and turns from it, disgusted. We leave the greys behind. I don't mind bowing, but I'll probably cut Ugly Dan's throat if I ever get the chance. Kind of like saying I take a zip out to Venus in a torch ship if it ever suited my fancy.
Hey, Dago! Dago!
Lauren calls to Gamma's hell diver. The man's a legend. All the other divers just a flash in the pan. I might be better than him.
Watch your pull!
Dago, a pale strip of old leather with a smirk for a face, lights a long burner and puffs out a cloud.
Don't know,
he draws.
Come on!
Don't care. Raw count never matters, Lambda.
Like bloody hell it doesn't. What did he pull on the week?
Lauren calls as we load into the tram. Everyone's lighting burners and popping out the swill, but they're all listening intently.
9,821 kilos,
Agama boasts. At this, I lean back and smile. I hear cheers from the younger Lambdas. The old hands don't react. I'm busy wondering what EO will do with sugar this month. We've never earned sugar before, only ever won it at cards. And fruit. I hear the Laurel gets you fruit. She'll probably give it all away to hungry children just to prove to the society she doesn't need their prizes. Me? I'd eat the fruit and play politics on a full stomach. But she's got the passion for ideas. Well, I've got no extra passion for anything but her.
Still won't win.
Dago draws as the tram starts away.
Darrow's a young pup, but he's smart enough to know that. Ain't you, Darrow?
Young or not, I beat your craggy ass.
You sure about that?
Deadly sure.
I wink and blow him a kiss.
Laurel's ours. Send your sisters to my township for sugar this time.
My friends laugh and slap their fry suit lids on their thighs.
Dago watches me. After a moment, he drags his burner deep. It glows bright and burns fast. "This is you," he says to me. In half a minute, the burner is a husk.
After disembarking the Horizon tram, I funnel into the flush with the rest of the crews. The place is cold, musty, and smells exactly like what it is, a cramped metal shed where thousands of men strip off fry suits after hours of pissing and sweating to take air showers. I peel off my suit, put on one of our hair caps, and walk naked to stand in the nearest transparent tube. There are dozens of them lined up in the flush. Here, there is no dancing, no boastful flips. The only camaraderie is exhaustion and the soft slapping of hands on thighs, creating a rhythm with the whoosh and shoot of the showers. The door to my tube hisses closed behind me, muffling the sounds of music. A familiar hum comes from the motor, followed by a great rush of atmosphere and a sucking resonance as air filled with antibacterial molecules screams from the top of the machine and shoots over my skin to whisk away dead skin and filth down the drain at the bottom of the tube. It hurts. After, I part with Lauren and Kieran as they go to the common to drink and dance in the taverns before the Laureltide dance officially starts. The tin pots will be handing out the allowances of foodstuffs and announcing the laurel at midnight. There will be dancing before and after for us of the day shift. The legends say that the god Mars was the parent of tears, foe to dance and loot. As to the former, I agree. But we of the colony of Lycos, one of the first colonies under Mars's surface, are a people of dance and song and family. We spit on that legend and make our own birthright. It is the one resistance we can manage against the society that rules us, gives us a bit of spine. They don't care that we dance or that we sing, so long as we obediently dig, so long as we prepare the planet for the rest of them. Yet to remind us of our place, they make one song and one dance, punishable by death. My father made that dance his last. I've seen it only once, and I've heard the song only once as well. I didn't understand when I was little. One about distant vales, mist, lovers lost, and a reaper meant to guide us to our unseen home. I was small and curious when the woman sang it, as her son was hanged for stealing foodstuffs. He would have been a tall boy, but he could never get enough food to put meat on his bones. His mother died next. The people of Lycos did the fading dirge for them, a tragic thumping of fists against chests, fading slowly, slowly, till the fists, like her heart, beat no more, and all dispersed. The sound haunted me that night. I cried alone in our small kitchen, wondering why I cried then when I had not for my father. As I lay on the cold floor, I heard a soft scratching at my family's door. When I opened the door, I found a small hemanthus bud nestled in the red dirt. Not a soul to be seen, only Io's tiny footprints in the dirt. That is the second time she brought flowers after death. Since song and dance are in our blood, I suppose it's not surprising that it was in both that I first realized I loved Io. Not little Io, not as she was, but Io as she is. She says she loved me before they hanged my father, but it was in a smoky tavern when her rusty hair swirled and her feet moved with the zither and her hips to the drums that my heart forgot a couple of beats. It was not her flips or cartwheels, none of the boastful foolery that so marks the dance of the young. Hers was a graceful, proud movement. Without me, she would not eat. Without her, I would not live. She may tease me for saying so, but she is the spirit of our people. Life's dealt us a hard hand. We're to sacrifice for the good of men and women we don't know. We're to dig to ready Mars for others. That makes some of us nasty-minded folks. But Io's kindness, her laughter, her fierce will, is the best that can come from a home such as ours. I look for her in my family's offshoot township, just a half-mile's worth of tunnel road away from the common. The township is one of 24 townships surrounding the common. It is a hive-like cluster of homes carved into the rock walls of the old mines. Stone and earth are our ceilings, our floors, our home. The clan is a giant family. Io grew up not a stone's throw from my house. Her brothers are like my own. Her father, like the one I lost. A mess of electrical wires tangled together along the cavern's ceiling, like a jungle of black and red vines. Lights hang down from the jungle, swaying gently as air from the common central oxygen system circulates. At the centre of the township dangles a massive hollow can. It's a square box, with images on each side. Pixels are blacked out and the image is faded and fuzzy, but never has the thing faltered, never has it turned off. It bathes our cluster of homes in its own pale light. Videos from the society. My family's home is carved into the rock 100 meters from the bottom floor of the township. A steep path leads from it to the ground, though pulleys and ropes can also bear one to the township's greatest heights. Only the old or infirm use those, and we have few of either. Our house has few rooms. Io and I only recently were able to take a room for ourselves. Kieran and his family have 2 rooms, and my mother and sister share the other. All Lambdas in Lycos live in our township. Omega and Upsilon neighbour us just a minute's worth of wide tunnel over to either side. We're all connected, except for Gamma. They live in the common, above the taverns, repair booths, silk shops and trade bazaars. The tin pots live in a fortress above that, nearer the barren surface of our harsh world. That's where the ports lie that bring the foodstuffs from Earth to us marooned pioneers. The hollow can above me shows images of mankind's struggles, which are then followed by soaring music as the society's triumphs flash past. The society's sigil, a golden pyramid with 3 parallel bars attached to the pyramid's 3 faces, a circle surrounding all, burns into the screen. The voice of Octavia Auloon, the society's aged sovereign, narrates the struggle man faces in colonizing the planets and moons of the system. Since the dawn of man, our saga as a species has been one of tribal warfare. It has been one of trial, one of sacrifice, one of daring to defy nature's natural limits. Now, through duty and obedience, we are united, but our struggle is no different. Sons and daughters of all colours, we are asked to sacrifice yet again. Here, in our finest hour, we cast our best seeds to the stars. Where first shall we flourish? Venus? Mercury? Mars? The moons of Neptune? Jupiter? Her voice grows solemn as her ageless face with its regal cast peers down from the HC. Her hands shimmer with the symbol of gold emblazoned upon their backs, a dot in the centre of a winged circle. Gold wings mark the sides of her forearms. Only one imperfection mars her golden face. A long crescent scar running along her right cheekbone. Her beauty is like that of a cruel bird of prey.
You brave red pioneers of Mars, strongest of the human breed, sacrifice for progress, sacrifice to pave the way for the future. Your lives, your blood, are a down payment for the immortality of the human race as we move beyond Earth and Moon. You go where we could not. You suffer so that others do not. I salute you. I love you. The helium-3 that you mine is the lifeblood of the terraforming process. Soon, the red planet will have breathable air, livable soil. And soon, when Mars is habitable, when you brave pioneers have made ready the red planet for us softer colors, we will join you, and you will be held in highest esteem beneath the sky your toil created. Your sweat and blood fuels the terraforming. Brave pioneers, always remember that obedience is the highest virtue. Above all, obedience, respect, sacrifice, hierarchy. I find the kitchen room of the home empty, but I hear Io in the bedroom. Stop right where you are, she commands through the door. Do not, under any condition, look in this room. Okay. I stop. She comes out a minute later, flustered and blushing. Her hair is covered in dust and webs. I rake my hands through the tangle. She's straight from the webbery, where they harvest the biosilk. You didn't go on the flush, I say, smiling. Didn't have time. Had to skirt out of the webbery to pick something up. What did you pick up? She smiles sweetly. You didn't marry me because I tell you everything, remember? And do not go into that room. I make a lunge for the door. She blocks me and pulls my sweatband down over my eyes. Her forehead pushes against my chest. I laugh, move the band, and grip her shoulders to push her back enough to look into her eyes. Or what? I ask with a raised eyebrow. She just smiles at me and cocks her head. I back away from the metal door. I dive into molten mineshafts without a blink, but there are some warnings you can buck off and others you can't. She stands on her tiptoes and pecks me good on the nose. Good boy. I knew you'd be easy to train, she says. Then her nose wrinkles because she smells my burn. She doesn't coddle me. Doesn't berate me, doesn't even speak except to say, I love you, with just the hint of worry in her voice. She picks the melted pieces of my fry suit out of the wound, which stretches from my knuckles to my wrist, and pulls tight at web wrap with antibiotic and nerve nucleic. Where'd you get that? I ask. If I don't lecture you, you don't quiz me on what's what. I kiss her on the nose and play with the thin band of woven hair around her ring finger. My hair, wound with bits of silk, makes her wedding band. I have a surprise for you tonight, she tells me. And I have one for you, I say, thinking of the laurel. I put my sweatband on her head like a crown. She wrinkles her nose at its wetness. Oh, well, I actually have two for you, Darrow. Pity you didn't think ahead. You might have gotten me a cube of sugar, or a satin sheet, or maybe even coffee to go with the first gift. Coffee? I laugh. What sort of colour did you think you married? She sighs. No benefits to a diver. None at all. Crazy. Stubborn. Rash. Dexterous, I say, with a mischievous smile, as I slide my hand up the side of her skirt. Reckon that has its advantages. She smiles and swats my hand away like it's a spider. Now put these gloves on, unless you want jabber from the women. Your mother's already gone on ahead. Chapter 3 The Laurel. We walk, hand in hand with the others from our township, through the tunnel roads to the common. Loon drones on above us on the HC, high above, as the Goldbrows, Aureus, to be technic, ought to be.
They show the horrors of a terrorist bomb killing a red mining crew and an orange technician group. The sons of Ares are blamed. Their strange glyph of Ares, a cruel helmet with spiked sunbursts exploding from the crown, burns across the screen. Blood drips from the spikes. Children are shown mangled. The sons of Ares are called tribal murderers, called bringers of chaos. They are condemned. The society's grey police and soldiers move rubble. Two soldiers of the obsidian colour, colossal men and women, nearly twice my size, are shown, along with nimble yellow doctors carrying several victims from the blast. There are no sons of Ares and Lycos. Their futile war does not touch us. Yet again, a reward is offered for information on Ares, the terrorist king. We have heard the broadcast 1,000 times, and still it feels like fiction. The sons think we are mistreated, so they blow things up. It is a pointless tantrum. Any damage they do delays the progress of making Mars ready for the other colours. It hurts humanity. In the tunnel road, where boys compete to touch the ceiling, the people of the townships flow in merriment toward the Laureltide dance. We sing the Laureltide song as we go, a swooping melody of a man finding his bride in a field of gold. There's laughter as the young boys try running along the walls or doing rows of flips, only to fall on their faces or be bested by a girl. Lights are strung along the lengthy corridor. In the distance, drunk Uncle Nerol, old now at 35, plays his zither for the children who dance about our legs. Even he cannot scowl forever. He wears the instrument suspended on shoulder straps so that it rests at his hips, with its plastic soundboard and its many taut metal strings facing up toward the ceiling. The right thumb strums the strings, except when the index finger drops down, or when the thumb picks single strings, all while the left hand picks out the bass line string by string. It is maddeningly difficult to make the zither sound anything but mournful. Uncle Nero's fingers are equal to the task, though mine only make tragic music. He used to play to me, teaching me to move to the dances my father never had the chance to teach me. He even taught me the forbidden dance, the one they'll kill you for. We'd do it in the old mines. He would hit my ankles with a switch until I pirouetted seamlessly through the swooping movements, a length of metal in my hand, like a sword. And when I got it right, he would kiss my brow and tell me I was my father's son. It was his lessons that taught me to move, that let me best the other kids as we played games of tag and ghosts in the old tunnels. The gulls dance in pairs, obsidians in threes, greys in dozens, he told me. We dance alone, because only alone do hell divers drill. Only alone can a boy become a man. I miss those days. Days when I was young enough that I didn't judge him for the stink of swill on his breath. I was 11 then. Only 5 years ago. Yet it feels like a lifetime. I get pats on the back from those of Lambda, and even Varlo the baker tilts me his brow and tosses Io a fist of bread. They've heard about the laurel, no doubt. Io tucks the bread into our skirts for later, and gives me a curious look. You're grinning like a fool, she says to me, pinching my side. What did you do? I shrug and try to wipe the grin from my face. It is impossible. Well, you're very proud of something, she says suspiciously. Kieran's son and daughter, my niece and nephew, patter by. 3 and 3, the twins are just fast enough to outrace both Kieran's wife and my mother. My mother's smile is one of a woman who has seen what life has to offer and is, at best, bemused. It seems you've burned yourself, my heart, she says when she sees my gloved hands. Her voice is slow, ironic. A blister, Eo says for me. Nasty one.
Mother shrugs.
His father came home with worse.
I put my arm around her shoulders. They are thinner than they used to be when she taught me, as all women teach their sons, the songs of our people.
Was that a hint of worry I heard, Mother?
I ask.
Worry? Me?
Silly child. Mother sighs with a slow smile. I kiss her on the cheek. Half the clans are already drunk when we arrive in the common. In addition to our dancing people, we're a drunken people. The tin pots let us alone in that. Hang a man for no real reason, and you might get some grumblings from the township, but force sobriety upon us, and you'll be picking up the pieces for a bloody damn month. Eo is of the mind that the fungus Grendel, which we distill, isn't native to Mars, and was instead planted here to enslave us to the swill. She brings this up whenever my mother makes a new batch, and my mother usually replies by taking a swig and saying,
"Rather a drink be my master than a man. These chains taste sweet."
They'll taste even sweeter with the syrups we'll get from the laurel boxes.
They have flavours for alcohol, like berry and something called cinnamon.
Perhaps I'll even get a new zither made of wood instead of metal. Sometimes they give those out. Mine is an old, frayed thing. I've played it too long. But it was my father's. The music swells ahead of us in the common, bawdy tunes of improvised percussion and wailing zithers. We're joined by Omegas and Upsilons, jostling about merrily toward the taverns. All the tavern doors have been thrown open, so their smoke and sound billow into the common's plaza. Tables ring the plaza, and a space is left clear surrounding the central gallows, so that there is room to dance. Gamma homes fill the next several levels, followed by supply depots, a sheer wall, and then, high above, in the ceiling, a sunken metal dome with nanoglass viewports. We call that place the Pot. It is the fortress where our keepers live and sleep. Beyond that is the uninhabitable surface of our planet, a barren wasteland that I've only seen on the HC. The helium-3 we mine is supposed to change that. The dancers and jugglers and singers of the Laurel Tide have already begun. Eo catches sight of Lauren and Kieran and gives them a holler. They're at a long, packed table near the Soggy Drop, the tavern where the oldest of our clan, Old Ripper, holds court and tells tales to drunken folks. He's passed out on the table tonight. It's a shame. I would have liked for him to see me finally get us the laurel. At our feasts, where there's hardly food enough for each soul to hold a bit in their gob, the drink and dance take centre. Lauren pours me a mug of swill before I even sit down. He's always trying to get others to drink so he can put ridiculous ribbons in their hair. He clears the way for Eo to sit beside his own wife, Dio, her sister, twin in looks, if not birth. Lauren has a love for Eo, like her brother Liam would. But I know he was once taken with her as he ever was with Dio. In fact, he bent a knee to my wife when she turned 14. But then again, half the lads joined him in that. No sweating it. She made her choice right and clear. Kieran's children swarm him. His wife kisses his lips. Mine kisses his brow and tousles his red hair. After a day in the webbery, harvesting spider-worm silk, I don't know how the wives managed to look so lovely. I was born handsome, face angular and slim, but the mines have done their part to change me. I'm tall, still growing, hair still like old blood, irises still as rust-red as Octavia O'Loon's are golden. My skin is tight and pale, but I'm pocked with scars, burns, cuts. Won't be long till I look hard as Dago, or tired as Uncle Neryl. But the women, they're beyond us, beyond me. Lovely and spry despite the webbery, despite the children they bear.
They wear layered skirts down past their knees and blouses of half a dozen reds. Never anything else. Always red. They're the heart of the clans. And how much more beautiful they will look wrapped in the imported bows and ribbons and laces contained in the laurel boxes. I touched the sigils on my hands. A bone-like texture. It's a crude red circle with an arrow and cross hatching. It feels right. Eo's doesn't. Her hair and eyes may be ours, but she could be one of the gold brows we see on the Holocan. She deserves it. Then I see her smack Lauren hard on the head as he throws back a mug of Ma's swill. God, if he's placing about the pieces, placed her well. I smile. But as I look behind her, my smile fades. Above the leaping dancers, amid the hundred swirling skirts and thumping boots and clapping hands, sways a single skeleton upon the cold, tall gallows. Others do not notice it. To me, it is a shadow, a reminder of my father's fate. Though we are diggers, we are not permitted to bury our dead. It is another of the society's laws. My father swayed for 2 months till they cut his skeleton down and ground his bones to dust. I was 6, but I tried to pull him down the first day. My uncle stopped me. I hated him because he kept me from my father's body. Later, I came to hate him again because I discovered he was weak. My father died for something, while Uncle Nerl lived and drank and squandered his life. He's a mad one. You'll see someday. Mad and brilliant and noble. Nerl's the best of my brothers, my father once said. Now, he's just the last. I never thought my father would do the devil's dance, what the old folk called death by hanging. He was a man of words and peace, but his notion was freedom, laws of our own. His dreams were his weapons. His legacy is the dancer's rebellion. It died with him on the scaffold. 9 men at once doing the devil's dance, kicking and flailing, till only he was left. It wasn't much of a rebellion. They thought peaceful protest would convince the society to increase the food rations, so they performed the reaping dance in front of the grav lifts and removed bits of machinery from the drills so they wouldn't work. The gambit failed. Only winning the laurel can get you more food. It's on 11 when my uncle sits down with his zither. He eyes me something nasty, drunk as a fool on Yuletide. We don't share words, though he has a kind one for Eo, and she for him. Everyone loves Eo. It's when Eo's mother comes over and kisses me on the back of my head and says very loudly, "We heard the news, you golden boy! The laurel! You are your father's son!" that my uncle stirs. "What's the matter, uncle?" I ask. "Have gas?" His nostrils flare wide. "You little shit-eater." He launches himself across the table, and soon we're a muddle of fists and elbows on the ground. He's big, but I flip him down and pound his nose with my bad hand till Eo's father and Kieran pull me off. Uncle Nerl spits at me. It's more blood and swill than anything else. Then we're drinking again, at opposite ends of the table. My mother rolls her eyes. "He's just bitter he didn't do a bloody damn thing to get the laurel. Shown up is all," Lauren says of his father. "Bloody damn coward wouldn't know how to win the laurel if it landed in his lap," I say, scowling. Eo's father pats me on the head and sees his daughter fixing my burned hand under the table. I slip my gloves back on. He winks at me. Eo's figured out the fuss about the laurel by the time the tin pots arrive, but she's not excited, as I'd hoped she'd be. She twists her skirts in her hands and smiles at me,
but her smiles are more like grimaces. I don't understand why she's so apprehensive. None of the other clans are.
Many come to pay their respects. All of the Helldivers do. Except Dago. He's sitting at a group of shiny gamma tables, the only ones with more food than Swill, smoking down a burner.
Can't wait for the sod to be eating regular rations,
Lauren chuckles.
Dago's never tasted peasant fare before.
Yet somehow he's thinner than a woman, Kieran adds.
I laugh along with Lauren and push a meagre piece of bread to Eo.
Cheer up, I tell her. This is a night for celebrating.
I'm not hungry,
she replies.
Not even if the bread has cinnamon on it.
Soon it will.
She gives me that half smile, as if she knows something I do not.